Chapter 3. Nonsense, Captain, interrupted the perfumer, who was uncomfortable somehow at the rencontre between the captain and the object of his affection. He's not in the profession, Mrs. C. This is my friend Captain Walker, and proud I am to call him my friend. And then aside to Mrs. C., one of the first swells on town, ma'am, a regular tip-topper. Humoring the mistake which Mrs. Crump had just made, Mr. Walker thrust the curling irons into the fire in a minute, and looked round at the ladies with such a fascinating grace, that both, now made acquainted with his quality, blushed and giggled, and were quite pleased. Mama looked at Gina, and Gina looked at Mama, and then Mama gave Gina a little blow in the region of her little waist, and then both burst out laughing, as ladies will laugh, and as, let us trust, they may laugh forever and ever. Why need there be a reason for laughing? Let us laugh when we are loggy, as we sleep when we are sleepy. And so Mrs. Crump and her demoiselle laughed to their heart's content, and both fixed their large shining black eyes repeatedly on Mr. Walker. I won't leave the room, said he, coming forward with the heated iron in his hand, and smoothing it on the brown paper with all the dexterity of a professor, for the fact is, Mr. W. every morning curled his own immense whiskers with the greatest skill and care. I won't leave the room, Glanton, my boy. My lady here took me for a hairdresser, and so, you know, I've a right to stay. He can't stay, said Mrs. Crump, all of a sudden, blushing as red as a peony. I shall have on my peignoir, Mama, said Miss, looking at the gentleman, and then dropping down her eyes and blushing too. But he can't stay, Gina, I tell you. Do you think that I would, before a gentleman, take off my, Mama means her front, said Miss, jumping up, and beginning to laugh with all her might, at which the honest landlady of the bootjack, who loved a joke, although at her own expense, laughed too, and said that no one, except Mr. Crump and Mr. Glanton, had ever seen her without the ornament in question. Do go now, you provoking thing, you, continued Miss C. to Mr. Walker. I wish to hear the overture, and it's 6 o'clock now, and we shall never be done against then. But the way in which Morgina said oh go, clearly indicated onto the perspicacious mind of Mr. Walker. Perhaps you had better go, continued Mr. Glanton, joining in this sentiment, and being, in truth, somewhat uneasy at the admiration which his well friend excited. I'll see you hanged first, Eggie my boy. Go I won't, until these ladies have had their hair dressed. Didn't you yourself tell me that Miss Crump's was the most beautiful hair in Europe? And do you think that I'll go away without seeing it? No, here I stay. You naughty, wicked, odious, provoking man, said Miss Crump. But, at the same time, she took off her bonnet, and placed it on one of the side candlesticks of Mr. Glanton's glass. It was a black velvet bonnet, trimmed with sham lace, and with a wreath of nasturtiums, convolvuluses, and wallflowers within, and then said, give me the peignoir, Mr. Archibald, if you please. And Glanton, who would do anything for her, when she called him Archibald, immediately produced that garment, and wrapped round the delicate shoulders of the lady, who, removing a sham gold chain which she wore on her forehead, two brass hair combs set with glass rubies, and the comb which kept her back hair together removing them, I say, and turning her great eyes towards the stranger, and giving her head a shake, down let tumble such a flood of shining waving heavy glossy jetty hair, as would have done Mr. Roland's heart good to see. It tumbled down Miss Morgina's back, and it tumbled over her shoulders, it tumbled over the chair on which she sat, and from the midst of it her jolly bright-eyed rosy face beamed out with a triumphant smile, which said, and I now the most angelic being you ever saw? By heaven! It's the most beautiful thing I ever saw! Cried Mr. Walker, with undisguised admiration. Isn't it? Said Mrs. Crump, who made her daughter's triumph her own. Ego, when I acted at the Wells in 1820 before that dear girl was born, I had such a head of hair as that, to a shade, sir, to a shade. They called me Ravenswing on account of it. I lost my head of hair when that dear child was born, and I often say to her, Morgina, you came into the world to rob your mother of her hair. Apostrophe, apostrophe, were you ever at the Wells, apostrophe, sir, in 1820? Perhaps you recollect, Miss Delancey? I am that Miss Delancey. Perhaps you recollect. Tink-a-tink, tink-a-tink, by the light of the star, on the blue river's brink, I heard a guitar. I heard a guitar, on the blue waters clear, and knew by its music, that Selim was near. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you remember that in the Baghdad Bells? Fatima, Delancey, Selim, Ben Lomond, his real name was Bunyan. And he failed, poor fellow, in the public line afterwards. It was done to the tambourine, and dancing between each verse. Tink-a-tink, tink-a-tink, how the soft music swells, and I hear the soft clink of the minaret bells. Tink-a-oh! Here cried Miss Crump, as if in exceeding pain, and whether Mr. Eglanton had twitched, pulled, or hurt any one individual hair of that lovely head I don't know, H, you are killing me, Mr. Eglanton. And with this mama, who was in her attitude, holding up the end of her boa as a visionary tambourine, and Mr. Walker, who was looking at her, and in his amusement at the mother's performances had almost forgotten the charms of the daughter, both turned round at once, and looked at her with many expressions of sympathy, while Eglanton, in a voice of reproach, said, Kill you, Morgina. I kill you? I'm better now, said the young lady, with a smile. I'm better, Mr. Archibald, now. And if the truth must be told, no greater coquette than Miss Morgina existed in all Mayfair, no, not among the most fashionable mistresses of the fashionable valets who frequented the Youth Jack. She believed herself to be the most fascinating creature that the world ever produced. She never saw a stranger, but she tried these fascinations upon him. And her charms of manner and person were of that showy sort which is most popular in this world, where people are wont to admire most that which gives them the least trouble to see. And so you will find a tulip of a woman, to be in fashion, when a little humble violet, or daisy of creation is passed over without remark. Morgina was a tulip among women, and the tulip fanciers all came flocking round her. Well, the said H and I'm better now, Mr. Archibald, thereby succeeded in drawing everybody's attention to her lovely self. By the latter words Mr. Eglanton was specially inflamed. He glanced at Mr. Walker, and said, Captain, didn't I tell you she was a creature? See her hair, sir. It's as black, and as glossy as satin. It weighs 15 pounds, that hair, sir. And I wouldn't let my apprentice, that blundering Mazarus, for instance, hang him. I wouldn't let anyone but myself dress that hair for 500 guineas. Ah, Miss Morgina, remember that you may always have a Glanton to dress your hair. Remember that, that's all. And with this the worthy gentleman began rubbing delicately a little of the eglantinia into those ambrosial locks, which he loved with all the love of a man and an artist. And as for Morgina showing her hair, I hope none of my readers will entertain a bad opinion of the poor girl for doing so. Her locks were her pride. She acted at the private theater air parts, where she could appear on purpose, to show them in a disheveled state, and that her modesty was real and not affected may be proved by the fact that when Mr. Walker, stepping up in the midst of Eglanton's last speech, took hold of a lock of her hair very gently with his hand, she cried, H, and started with all her might. And Mr. Eglanton observed very gravely, Captain, Miss Crump's hair is to be seen, and not to be touched, if you please. No more it is, Mr. Eglanton, said her mama. And now, as it's come to my turn, I beg the gentleman will be so obliging as to go. Must I? Cried Mr. Walker, and as it was 6:30, and he was engaged to dinner at the Egent Club, and as he did not wish to make Eglanton jealous, who evidently was annoyed by his staying, he took his hat just as Miss Crump's coiffure was completed, and saluting her and her mama, left the room. A tip-top swell, I can assure you, said Eglanton, nodding after him. regular bang-up chap, and no mistake. Intimate with the Marquess of Billingsgate, and Lord Vauxhall, and that's it. He's very genteel, said Mrs. Crump. La, I'm sure I think nothing of him, said Morgina. And Captain Walker walked towards his club, meditating on the beauties of Morgina. Hat hair, said he, what eyes the girl has. They're as big as billiard balls, and £5,000. Eglanton's in luck. £5,000, she can't have it, it's impossible. No sooner was Mrs. Crump's front arranged, during the time of which operation Morgina sat in perfect contentment looking at the last French fashions in the Courrier des Dames, and thinking how her pink satin slip would dye, and make just such a mantilla as that represented in the engraving, no sooner was Mrs. Crump's front arranged, than both ladies, taking leave of Mr. Eglanton, tripped back to the Bootjack Hotel in the neighborhood, where a very neat green fly was already in waiting, the gentleman on the box of which, from a livery stable in the neighborhood, gave a knowing touch to his hat, and a salute with his whip, to the two ladies, as they entered the tavern. Mr. W apostrophe S inside, said the man, a driver from Mr. Snaffle's establishment. He's been in and out this score of times, and looking down the street for you. And in the house, in fact, was Mr. Woolsey, the tailor, who had hired the fly, and was engaged to conduct the ladies that evening to the play. It was really rather too bad to think that Miss Morgina, after going to one lover to have her hair dressed, should go with another to the play, but such is the way with lovely women. Let her have a dozen admirers, and the dear coquette will exercise her power upon them all. And as a lady, when she has a large wardrobe, and a taste for variety in dress, will appear every day in a different costume, so will the young and giddy beauty wear her lovers, encouraging now the black whiskers, now smiling on the brown, now thinking that the gay smiling rattle of an admirer becomes her very well, and now adopting the sad sentimental melancholy one, according as her changeful fancy prompts her. Let us not be too angry with these uncertainties and caprices of beauty, and depend on it that, for the most part, those females who cry out loudest against the flightiness of their sisters, and rebuke their undue encouragement of this manner that, would do as much themselves, if they had the chance, and are constant, as I am to my coat just now, because I have no other. Did you see W, Gina dear? Said her mama, addressing that young lady. He's in the bar with your pa, and has his military coat with the king's buttons, and looks like an officer. This was Mr. Woolsey's style, his great aim being to look like an army gent, for many of whom he in his capacity of tailor made those splendid red and blue coats which characterize our military. As for the royal button, had not he made a set of coats for his late majesty, George IV? And he would add, when he narrated this circumstance, Sir, Prince Blucher and Prince Schwarzenberg's measures in the house now, and what's more, I've cut for Wellington. I believe he would have gone to St. Helena to make a coat for Napoleon, so great was his ardor. He wore a blue-black wig, and his whiskers were of the same hue. He was brief and stern in conversations, and he always went to masquerades and balls in the field marshal's uniform. He looks really quite the thing tonight, continued Mrs. Crump. Yes, said Gina, but he's such an odious wig, and the dye of his whiskers always comes off on his white gloves. Everybody has not their own hair, love, continued Mrs. Crump with a sigh, but Eglanton's is beautiful. Every hairdresser's is, answered Morgina, rather contemptuously. But what I can't bear is that their fingers is always so very fat and pudgy. In fact, something had gone wrong with the fair Morgina. Was it that she had but little liking for the one pretender or the other? Was it that young Glauber, who acted Romeo in the private theatricals, was far younger and more agreeable than either? Or was it that seeing a real gentleman, such as Mr. Walker, with whom she had had her first interview, she felt more and more the want of refinement in her other declared admirers? Certain, however, it is that she was very reserved all the evening, in spite of the attentions of Mr. Woolsey, that she repeatedly looked round at the box door, as if she expected someone to enter, and that she partook of only a very few oysters, indeed, out of the barrel which the gallant tailor had sent down to the bootjack, and off which the party supped. What is it? Said Mr. Woolsey to his ally, Crump, as they sat together after the retirement of the ladies. He was dumb all night. She never once laughed at the farce, nor cried at the tragedy, and you know she laughs and cries uncommon. She only took half her negus, and not above a quarter of her beer. No more she did, replied Mr. Crump, very calmly. Think it must be the barber as has been captivating her. He dressed her hair for the play. Hang him, I'll shoot him, said Mr. Woolsey. Fat foolish effeminate beast like that Mary Miss Morgina? Never. I will shoot him. I'll provoke him next Saturday. I'll tread on his toe. I'll pull his nose. No quarreling at the kidneys, apostrophe answered Crump sternly. There shall be no quarreling in that room, as long as I'm in the chair. Well, at any rate you will stand, my friend. You know I will, answered the other. You are honorable, and I like you better than a Glanton. I trust you more than a Glanton, sir. You're more of a man than a Glanton, though you are a tailor, and I wish with all my heart you may get Morgina. Mrs. C goes the other way, I know. But I tell you what, women will go their own ways, sir, and Morgie's like her mother in this point, and depend upon it, Morgie will decide for herself. Mr. Woolsey presently went home, still persisting in his plan for the assassination of a Glanton. Mr. Crump went to bed very quietly, and snored through the night in his usual tone. Mr. Glanton passed some feverish moments of jealousy, for he had come down to the club in the evening, and had heard that Morgina was gone to the play with his rival. And Miss Morgina dreamed of a man who was, must we say it, exceedingly like Captain Howard Walker, Mrs. Captain so-and-so, thought she. H, I do love a gentleman dearly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.